Podcast incoming. Episode 103. Zoinks! The robots of Scooby-Doo. Scooby-Doo. Scooby-Doo.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of 50 Years of Shit Robots with Matt Brown. Hello, and Stephen Murray.
Well, hello.
Now, we are in the middle of a season break. We have just luxuriated in the film 2001, A Space Odyssey. Maybe we over-luxuriated.
You did. You bought a book.
What have I told you? Never ever buy books. And we're about to enter the Technicolor 1970s in season 8. But before we do that, we wanted to bring you a special episode with our friend Mark Norman from the Folklore podcast on the robots of Scooby-Doo. More of which in a moment. First, though, there's a little bit of actual robot news that I thought looked quite exciting, which I sent you the video this morning, Stephen. It's of a warehouse robot that collapsed after 20 hours of work. And the video clip is quite short. It's basically the last 20 seconds before it collapses.
This is Digit, isn't it? The experimental robot. He does all the heavy lifting and puts heavy boxes onto conveyor belts and things.
It moves a box from somewhere to somewhere else and then tries to go back for another box and then just falls into a heap on the floor.
Oh, it is a complete collapse.
It looked, I think, very Oscar Wilde-esque, the collapse, the sort of like, oh, I'm spent.
You have the vapors.
Yeah. Pass the smelling salts, please. I also thought that it was I felt quite good about being human. I felt less like robots are going to destroy us all when I saw that.
Well, they'll destroy us for 20 hours. And then that'll be it. They'll be spent.
That's it. So I'm going to include the video of Digit collapsing in the show notes so that you can enjoy it just as much as Stephen and I enjoyed it. So now, on to the meat and potatoes of this podcast. Observant regular listeners will know that we've changed our titles to give you the title of the episode in the title sequence of the episode. And this is called Zoinks, the Robots of Scooby-Doo. So without further ado, and to explain everything, let us welcome to the podcast Mark Norman. Hi, Mark.
Hello.
I feel like we should have unmasked you for this podcast.
There's still time. You may find that I am actually not me at all, but just a disgruntled janitor.
Now, Mark, I met you a few years ago when you very kindly invited me on your podcast. You are the proprietor of the Folklore podcast. You've come on because we're in 1969, and in this episode, we're going to take a look at a cartoon TV robot from Scooby-Doo. And you are something of an expert in Scooby-Doo, as well as all of your other folklore expertise, because you've just written a book called Zoinks, The Spooky Folklore of Scooby-Doo. What prompted you to write this book?
The Wicker Man prompted me to write this book, which I know sounds really bizarre, but I was reading a book on the behind-the-scenes production of The Wicker Man. And in that book, there was a throwaway reference to Scooby-Doo. As I was reading this, I kind of thought, oh, Scooby-Doo and how it ties into other folklore and pop culture. That's a really interesting subject. I'll bet nobody's written a book about that. So I had a quick check. And no, indeed, they haven't written a book about that.
Can you give it as an example of how folklore has influenced Scooby-Doo?
There are lots of different ways, but some of it is in the design elements, I think. That's probably one of the strongest. So I guess if you took, for example, something like the Gothic as a genre, we see lots of that represented. I can think of only one episode, to give one example, I can think of only one episode in the whole canon of Scooby-Doo where the moon isn't full, for example.
Okay. Yeah.
So there's lots of myth and folklore surrounding the moon and full moon and lunacy, obviously, and werewolves and all these sorts of things. And in pretty much every episode that takes place at night, the moon will always be full. There's one exception where the moon is a crescent, but then when things start to kick off the next night, it suddenly becomes a full moon.
Right.
So you see these kinds of influences. Certainly, a lot of the villains which end up being unmasked are based on lots of folklore and mythology, or certainly they draw elements from it. Not always well-known ones either, particularly. So Mystery Incorporated had a whole episode surrounding the Hodeg, which is just a cryptid that comes out of one particular part of America. So it's not always well-known. But that whole design element, which kind of it also used as a commentary on the social conditions of America at the time as well, it all draws from those kinds of aspects of our own.
Very interesting, but, particularly yeah. as in my head, I sort of have always thought of them as sort of ultra rational. You know, it's like it's never a ghost; it's somebody pretending to be a ghost.
But it often is a ghost.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So okay. When you get onto some of the later iterations of the show, a lot of the Scrappy-Doo ones, the supernatural is real.
Okay.
There's a whole series of episodes called The 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo, which is a bit of a misnomer because there are only 12 ghosts.
Is that influenced by the film, 13 Ghosts? Or?
No. I think it was just, as far as I know, they just decided they were going to have a concept that would run for this number of episodes, which have had an overall story arc where all of these demons are released from a box, and Vincent Van Gool, who is played by Vincent Price, whose chest this was, needs Scoob and Shaggy and one or two others to kind of collect all these demons back up again, and that was the overall concept.
Do you know, I'm glad I asked just for that name.
Vincent Van Gool. Yeah.
Well, when we were first talking about the idea of you coming on and talking about robots in Scooby-Doo, you sent a list of the number of robot episodes, there's dozens of them, aren't there?
There are, yeah. That was pulled from my extensive spreadsheet. So I have this ridiculous spreadsheet of every episode. It runs to, scrolling down my window, 575 rows.
Well, I think one of the nice things about Scooby-Doo is that it's been reworked, you know, over the years. Because, I mean, you sent us in one of the original episodes we're going to be chatting about. But also a TV series called, what was it called? Scooby-Doo Incorporated.
Incorporated.
Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated was the kind of the big reboot of Scooby-Doo, which was done for Nickelodeon. And it's generally recognised outside of the original Where Are You to be the best interpretation of Scooby-Doo. And it works equally well for adults as well as kids.
Yeah, it's beautifully animated. I love it.
Oh, it's wonderful. It is. And it's a bit like Russell T. Davies's reboot of Doctor Who in that it runs across two seasons, 52 episodes, but they call them chapters because there is an overall story arc that runs across the whole thing.
Okay.
And it's really, really sophisticated.
Yeah.
And there's a will they, won't they between Velma and Shaggy.
Yeah.
There is. And that leads to Velma's true sexuality being sort of portrayed on screen for the second time, I think. But certainly it's confirmed in Mystery Incorporated that Velma prefers the girls to the boys.
Right, okay. Wow. So we're going to be looking at one of the original episodes. We're going to be looking at a couple of episodes from What's New Scooby-Doo, which was the sort of early 2000s reboot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we've got an episode of Mystery Incorporated from 2010, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Well, should we dive into the first episode, Foul Play in Funland?
from the grammatically incorrect Scooby-Doo, where are you? Exclamation mark. Yeah.
Yes, good. Now, I remember this, watching this originally. That was a huge, massive fan. That I absolutely loved it. I knew it was a rinse and repeat, but I was so engaged with the monsters and the locations and the atmosphere.
Yeah.
So I was brought up on the Universal, all the Universal monsters, and they all make an appearance.
Oh, they're in there quite a few times.
Yeah, they are.
Versions. Yeah.
I remember loving Scooby-Doo as well. I was a big fan of Scooby-Doo, except I suppose I don't know when Scrappy-Doo came in, but that was definitely a playground talking point. Was how much everyone hated Scrappy-Doo.
Yeah, he came in sort of to try and liven the series back up again after a few years. So I think in the mid to late 70s he was first introduced.
He
is generally hated by most people, although interestingly I interviewed a few writers of the show when I was researching, one of whom was John Semper Jr., who he's well known in kind of Hollywood cartoon circles because he created the animated Spider-Man, amongst other things. But he was a writer on some of the Scrappy-Doo episodes many years ago. And he still feels that Scrappy is the strongest character out there.
Really?
Yeah.
He also feels a bit like an off-the-shelf Hanna-Barbera character. Like there was an awful lot of cartoons that they really did churn out, and the amount of different characters that Hanna-Barbera brought out, it was incredible.
I mean, it got to the stage where they started to recreate their own IP, really, because Goober and the Ghost Chasers followed on from Scooby-Doo, and what is it? Four teens and a dog, talking dog. It's exactly the same premise from the same stable.
Yeah.
But then they also, later on in Scooby-Doo, started to also parody their own IP as well
right.
and make fun of their own characters. So, they're pretty savvy.
And also, like, I can remember as well another cartoon I loved at this time when I was a kid was Godzilla, the Godzilla cartoon, which ended up having a Scrappy-Doo kind of character in Godzuki.
Yeah, well, we don't talk about him either, do we, really? Not those of us of a certain age don't, anyway.
But, I mean, so having an irritating kind of younger component seems like that was something that was done. When I was watching Foul Play in Funland, which seems very much like a foundational episode because so much of the action appears in the title sequence, doesn't it?
Yes.
From this.
Yes, it does. There were a few episodes from the first season that had bits taken out to put a montage together for the title sequence, and this one was quite significant in that. Yeah. Bits of it remained in the season two title sequence, although other bits were changed. But certainly Scooby running along in a barrel and bumping into the robot stayed, although the next shot where he looks up at the robot was changed to him looking up at something from season two.
Right.
But elements of it stayed in there. And in fact, they went back and reused that concept as an homage later on in a much later episode where Scooby has to hide in a barrel. And he runs along and bumps into somebody and looks up at them. And they did it shot for shot, just as homage to that original title sequence.
Right. So where in the Scooby-Doo timeline are we then with Foul Play and Funland?
So we're in the first season. We're about halfway through the very, very first season. So Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Season 1, Episode 8.
And how was the show received at the time? Was it an instant sort of hit?
It was pretty much, yes, because the reason that it came about was through campaigning by ACT, Action for Children's Television, which was like a parent group of Mary Whitehouse pretenders in the States who were complaining about the amount of violence and horror and these sorts of things which were present in children's television at the time. So Scooby-Doo was really created as a kind of solution to that problem. So it wanted to retain some of those elements because kids like that sort of thing, but to present it in a different way. So it was much heavier on the comedy. You know, it had a laugh track, which you don't see anymore in cartoons, really, but was developed quite a bit at that time.
There were no anvils and no explosions like in the Merry Melodies cartoons.
No.
And was there being rational explanations? Was that a key part of this season?
Yeah, it was
as a response to the criticisms by that group.
Yes, yes, it was to show that scary stuff isn't scary, crime doesn't pay, all of those sorts of. I mean, you look at Victorian folklore, for example, it's full of morality tales, you know, stories that teach you the best way to behave and how you should be as a good upstanding member of the church or whatever. And it does exactly the same thing. You know, it teaches you those lessons and shows you that actually there's nothing to be frightened about, really.
Yeah. Well, Hollywood did that right up until the 60s.
Morality.
Yeah. Right. In the famous film of Mildred Pierce, because the main character in that went off and became an independent woman, left her husband and started a business, she had to lose her last born.
Wow.
I know.
Wow. Well, we don't get that, thankfully, in Foul Play in Funland. But I thought it was interesting that there's a deserted funfair in it, which has become a well-worn trope for horror films and horror stories. Is this the first time that the deserted funfair was used?
It is the first Scooby-Doo deserted funfair, yeah. But yes, you're right. It's interesting that it became one of those iconic symbols that, you know, when people talk about Scooby-Doo in that kind of parody way, like I said earlier on about, you know, being a disgruntled janitor in a mask, that, you know, the creepy fairground owner is one of those iconic versions of that. Although, in fact, in this episode, the funfair owner is anything but creepy. He's just a regular bloke.
I found them quite chilling, I thought. I've recast them in my mind as sort of like part of MAGA Trumpland, I think.
Wow. They do kind of look like they've stepped out of American Gothic and left their pitchfork on the canvas.
Yeah.
Could this have been influenced by 1962's Carnival of Souls?
Which has
got, it's got an empty carnival in it, and it's got a very creepy carnival owner in it.
So that existed as a trope before this episode.
1962, as far as I can remember, I think that was the first time you've seen an empty carnival.
Right.
I mean, it certainly drew a lot of influence, and always has done from films and TV programs that have gone before it. I mean, the whole cast of Scooby-Doo is based on the cast of an American sitcom.
Yes. So in this episode, the gang are by a beach collecting clams.
Yeah.
And they notice that there's a funfair, deserted funfair, but on the beach, which then suddenly the lights come on. So they go off and investigate. I was interested to see that they leap to a haunted conclusion, like almost immediately. Despite, what did you say, this was episode 8, so despite sort of 7 previous, you know, times when it hasn't been a haunting, there's been a rational explanation for it. But
You've always got to go first principles. There's something to investigate, it's bound to be spooky.
Yeah. The gang go and investigate, and they can't work it out because there's nobody in the funfair, and yet things seem to be happening by themselves, which is why, again, they double down on the haunting.
A slightly creaky looking wooden roller coaster is one of the first things that runs
that's right.
by itself.
And Fred, you know, does one of those throwing a ball at some vases and to knock them down. And when he turns around, the vases have been stacked back up. One thing I thought about seeing this, they see that a till, an automated till, effectively, ring up some money. And they double down then on it being haunted. And I sort of was reminded then of the Arthur C. Clarke-ism about sort of any technology sufficiently advanced will seem like magic.
Yes.
Feels like there's a bit of that going on.
Yeah, although at the same time, it does look like that till's come out of the 1920s. Hugely advanced. It's purely that they can't see it being rung up because it happens at such high speed.
Yes, that's the robot is ringing up, but he's just moving so quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Because
I don't think
they comment. They comment a number of times on the fact that when they do see him, he's moving like a torpedo.
Even though when we see him moving like a torpedo, he's going quite slowly.
Yeah, it's a very slow-moving torpedo.
Yeah,
because the chase sequence was going to be tricky otherwise when you get to it.
That's true. So they eventually find out that there's a robot who is in the carnival, and yet there's a the robot starts to chase them, and it's all very exciting when they're on a roller coaster and the robot's coming closer and closer. They find the caretakers of the property, and the caretakers they tell them that there's someone strange in the funfair, and the caretakers deny anything, everything. They say they don't know what they're talking about. Must be seeing things. But it ends up that the caretaker husband wants to automate the funfair, and the caretaker wife finds the whole thing an abomination, and she doesn't think that robots should be anywhere near children.
No, so she sabotages the robot because thinks that, it would be unsafe for an automated funfair, a funfair run by a whole phalanx of Charlie the robots. So she sabotages him, so he goes wrong and starts to create all sorts of damage and chaos, which if there had been any children there would have been far worse.
Yes,
and also because he was quite safe.
There is a sort of an unmasking at the end, isn't there? But it's not a classic pulling a face off of someone unmasking.
It's not, no, because there isn't really a villain as such in this one. So this is the first episode of Scooby-Doo as a franchise. There are others later on, but it's the first time that rare thing happens. There is no crime being committed. Usually there is a crime and there is a consequence and you learn that lesson. But in this one, there isn't a crime.
Well, I mean, I suppose the message, though, is one that we've come up again and again and again on this podcast, which is that robots are sort of ciphers for technology, and technology is bad and will ultimately be the destruction of humanity.
Yes, and again, it's a commentary on robots taking jobs in society, isn't it? You want an automated funfair, no human intervention. And it's a commentary on that.
Yeah. One thing that I wasn't prepared for, because I mean, as I said earlier, I used to love this show, was how much I disliked all of the main characters.
Had you forgotten how annoying they are?
Oh my God, they're such busybodies, aren't they?
Oh yeah, yeah. That's the whole premise of a gang of teens investigating anything.
Yeah.
But who's the most annoying?
I think Fred is.
Fred's an interesting character. In the Mystery Incorporated reboot, they tried to make it clear that Fred is autistic.
Oh, right.
Because he has this obsession with traps, and he's completely unaware of any kind of social interaction in a romantic way between him and Daphne.
Right.
And they put those things down to his being autistic.
And is that something that is that a retrofit? Are we supposed to think that he's autistic from in this first season as well?
No, it's a retrofit to explain his character traits, but I think it's an interesting one.
It is, isn't it? But I suppose in a way that's just how mores change over time, isn't it? Mm.
Yeah, it is, yeah. And they've reshaped the characters over the years as well, because in the 1960s ones, Daphne is obviously just blundering, danger-prone Daphne, who's not very much help at all, but looks glamorous.
Yeah.
And when they reboot her later on, she becomes a much stronger character. She's a
physicist.
She's an expert in martial arts, though, so she's good in the fight scene.
Yeah.
So they make her a much stronger character.
Excellent. So the robot, he's very basic looking, isn't he? Essentially, he's an android.
He's got overalls on.
He's got overalls.
He looks utilitarian.
He does look very utilitarian. His eyes seem to be different sizes.
I think he's very much drawn from the kind of the design of B-movie robots that came before, isn't it? That kind of, we can't do a decent robot, so we'll stick him in some overalls.
He's a bit Frankenstein-esque, maybe, as well.
Yeah, a bit like the early Cybermen. They're basically blokes in overalls with a mask on.
Yes. So we like to rate our robots that fall in our timeline, which this one does in 1969. So we give it two scores: one score out of five for looks, one score out of five for how well it does what it's supposed to do.
And be warned, Matthew will not allow nostalgia.
No, no, I've listened to enough episodes featuring the Daleks to know how that works.
Invite him on and make him an enemy.
So what do we think of Charlie, the Funland robot, in terms of his looks out of five? Mark, what would you give him out of five?
It's not a strong performance, is it, really? He's got a decent enough head, but it kind of goes downhill from there, I think, really.
I mean, his eyes are very... I mean, I think that it, I'd say almost iconic, aren't they, given that it appears in the title sequence?
Oh, yeah, it is an iconic look, but in terms of a robot, possibly not the best one.
No. So what are you going to give it? Give us a number.
It's got a good sound, though.
One of the sounds it's got is from the Jetsons.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yeah. I wondered whether you'd spot that. It is. Yeah. The walk sound is lifted completely from the Jetsons.
Does that mean we've got to mark him down for having a non-original, sounds?
I think it's offset by the fact he's got quite a good synth riff to go alongside.
He does, doesn't he?
All right. So number
early
out of five,
craft work.
A number out of five for his looks, Mark, please.
Oh, I'll give him a 3. He's quite lovable.
Stephen Murray?
Yeah, 3.
Okay.
There's a bit of the creation of the humanoids about him.
There is a little bit. I was going to go 2, but I'm very happy to go for 3. So 3 out of 5 for his looks. What about fit for purposeness, Mark?
He's massively fit for purpose. If it wasn't for Sarah's irresponsible intervention,
yes,
he would have done exactly what he was designed for. You can't fault him for it.
He did chase them all, though, didn't he?
Yeah, but was he chasing them out of malice, or was he chasing them to make sure that they were not harmed because the funfair wasn't officially open yet? Nothing has been tested. The risk assessments had not been signed off.
As part of him chasing them, he ends up, I mean, ruining a shed and a wall.
Yeah.
He goes right the way through a wall.
Yeah.
I feel like that's... Is that fit for purpose? Breaking
He's been
a wall?
Sabotaged, though.
Okay, so what are you going to give them for fit for purposeness?
I'll give him 4 because if it wasn't for the fact that he was sabotaged, which means there's got to be a chink in his armor or a backdoor in his software, I'd have given him a 5 because, you know, he is doing what he's supposed
doing
to do.
Supposed
so
to
we'll,
do.
We'll go with a 4.
4. Stephen Murray?
Yep, 4. Strong 4 for me.
Who am I to downgrade your score? Let's give him 7 then. 7 out of 10, meaning that he is officially not a shit robot. Well done, Charlie.
That's out of left field.
That is.
And this is why Scooby-Doo has survived for 50 plus years.
Absolutely.
The not shitness.
So let's talk about the other... You sent us 4 episodes to look at.
Yes.
Let's have a chat about some of the other ones. We've just done quite a lot of podcasting about HAL in 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
So maybe we should just chat quickly about the episode called High Tech House of Horrors from 2003.
So this one comes from What's New Scooby-Doo, which is one of the iterations which plays the comedy up a lot more.
So essentially this is the gang have gone to the Epcot Center.
Yeah, yeah, they're at a fair of future technology.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
And they are, and one of the exhibits is a house of the future.
Yes,
and the House of the Future has several robots in, but it's the sort of controlling tech that goes rogue and sort of wants to do everyone harm. But what I thought was really interesting about this is that there are so many references to other things.
It's full of movie parodies, this one.
I know, it's incredible, isn't it?
It's something that a lot of the later episodes did quite often.
Okay.
So yes, you've obviously got Shari, the tech that runs the house, is obviously Hal.
Yes.
Do you think so? I think it's Vicky from iRobot.
Well, it preceded iRobot. I mean, it could have, and it is like Vicky in iRobot.
When was iRobot?
I think iRobot's 2004, and this is 2003.
Ah, okay. Yeah. All right.
But that's not
Forget
to say that.
That
they couldn't have been fans of some of the references that iRobot had that we talked about. In our iRobot deconstruction. So it's very possible. But like you say, it is quite Hally, isn't it?
Yeah.
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 As well.
And then what you've got Bond parodies in there.
Yeah.
Oh, the laser.
You got Star Wars, the trash compactor scene from Star Wars is in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You've also got the nice thing, again, for us is that there's so many robots that we've already seen on our journey through 50 years from 1927. So there's insect robots, which we love an insect mm-hmm. robot. They're the best designed robots, aren't they? Because they're more stable, Stephen Murray.
Yeah. They're fit for purpose.
They are fit for purpose. Unlike the Jeeves, the Jeeves robot, which is like a housekeeper robot, which is, has got a very sort of strange... that felt sort of Jetsons-y sort of look.
Yeah, it looks very Jetsons-y. Mm. And they parody themselves when they take the head off. It's lying on the floor and they take the head off and they go, there's nobody inside.
Yes, that's yes. right.
They do, yeah, so they're expecting to be unmasking a caretaker or whatever. And no, it's not.
Yeah. And but then at the end of the episode, the sort of coda to the episode is that Scooby, in order to get some more food, sort of dresses up in the robot and fools yeah. everybody, which again actually is something that we love on this show, because it's a, it's someone in a robot suit, yes. Which is very, it's right up 50 years of shit robot street.
But again, this whole episode is a commentary, isn't it, on technology, and the kind of the way that AI is starting to go at that time as much as anything else.
Very true, and as we've, as Stephen said, I mean, it comes out just before the film I, Robot, so there's obviously something in the air, isn't there, at the time that there was. I suppose we've not long had the Millennium Bug for Argo.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
So of course, and the villain in this piece is a robot controlling another robot.
Yeah.
Because the house computer, or I was going to say house robot, but that's a bit Robot Wars, isn't it? The house computer AI is controlling Jeeves, the butler robot. So that again is a commentary, I think, on, you know, AI starting to be able to gain sentience and the destruction of mankind that will inevitably follow.
Yeah, I mean, in all of the episodes that we look at, maybe Charlie not so much, but the robots are cast in a very negative light, aren't they? They are they're the things that will do everyone harm.
Yeah.
And I was wondering whether in any of those, you know, we mentioned at the beginning that there were dozens of robot episodes. Are there any episodes where that isn't the case?
Yes. So Shaggy and Scooby do get a clue, which is very much a kind of Dr. Evil style James Bondian treatment of the show. There's not much supernatural in that. It's more that kind of world domination spy stuff.
Yeah.
But Shaggy inherits a fortune from his uncle, Albert Shaggleford. And along with that, he inherits a big mansion and a robot butler who spends the entire series calling Scooby Ruby Roo, because right. he thinks that that's what his name is, because that's how he pronounces it.
It might be. Maybe he's right. Oh, that's brilliant. Oh, that's good to know then, that robots aren't always evil.
They're not. They're not always. They don't always play the villain, but usually they do.
Then the last episode you gave was from 2010, which was Scooby-Doo's Mystery Incorporated, called Howl of the Fright Hound.
Yep, another big movie parody episode again, this one.
Yeah, Terminator.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of Terminator in this one.
Well, the animation I thought was superb on this.
And it's lovely.
The look of the... So there's a robot dog in this. The look of the dog was brilliant. I mean, terrifying.
Oh, it's very much based on the design of kind of hellhound-style black dogs from folklore.
A bit of Black Shuck.
Yeah, absolutely. It draws on that kind of aspect in its design very heavily. I mean, I like the design of Mystery Incorporated across the whole thing. There's some nice elements in it as well. There's the character who runs a kind of seafood shack on the beach, who's obviously a sort of ex-piratical type character, but instead of having lost an eye in battle, he's lost a nose, so he wears a nose patch, which
I like. The reveal of who the villain is in this is that it's the mum of the lad who's trying to chat Velma up.
Yeah, yeah. So it takes that kind of trying to impress Velma thing one stage further, because the son hasn't got the capacity to be able to impress Velma. So
his character design seemed to be at odds with the rest of the animation. It was awful.
I mean, at that point, when his introduction, I was still reeling from the knowledge that Shaggy and Velma are boyfriend and girlfriend.
I was as well, actually.
Yeah.
You've got to choose between me or the dog.
Yeah,
that chooses the dog.
That's not a good choice to make. She tries to fix other problems with him as well. She tries to fix the fact that he says "like" all the time by putting, I think if I remember rightly, she puts like a strong elastic band on his wrist, and every time he says the word "like," she snaps the elastic band like Pavlovian programming.
Amazing. And that seems out of character for her. It feels like she's more, I don't know, independent than that in all of the iterations I've ever seen.
Yeah. Which is the episode we watched that had the makeover machine in it?
That was High Tech House of Horrors.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that was really interesting. So that's 2003. And it was the boys looked at all the cars in the future world, and the girls looked at the makeup,
looked at the makeup machine.
Yeah. How far we've come.
And Velma gets a makeover and Daphne doesn't, because she's perfect.
That's who doesn't need a makeover.
Yeah. There's also there's a robot spy or a remote control robot spider in this as well, isn't there?
There is,
which is nice.
Yeah, but it's the robot dog that's the kind of the key robot in this one. And a lot of set pieces from Terminator. All the stuff in the police station is Terminator, the exoskeleton showing through the dog's design obviously comes from Terminator as well. And then the bit at the end just before it's crushed to death is a straight Terminator lift as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we did an episode not so long ago where we were talking about 2023, what are going to be the hot toys for kids. And one of them was a headless robot dog. Which you could go out running with, and store in the boot of your car.
Which you could go out running away from.
Yeah, it's absolutely terrifying. But robot dogs it's a very sort of like prescient robot design to take in 2010, I suppose, isn't it?
Did you spot any other movies referenced in this one?
No. What were some of the other ones?
Aliens is in there.
Great.
Because Scooby uses a forklift.
Oh, that's
like
right.
Fight against the Queen.
It's interesting, isn't it, that I suppose that in the earlier iterations of Scooby-Doo, they were taking a lot of their the look of it from folklore.
Yeah.
And in subsequent iterations, they take an awful lot of content is derived from parodying films.
Yes. Yeah, although Mystery Incorporated goes back to drawing a lot of folklore into its episodes as well, but it does it alongside the cultural references, so you get the best of both worlds in that one.
Is that your favorite iteration of Scooby-Doo,
aside from the original or the first two seasons of Where Are You? I think it's the best overall. I think a close second would be Be Cool Scooby-Doo then afterwards, which plays up the comedy massively.
Which when are we talking then?
That came after. That was a little bit later than Mystery Incorporated.
Right.
But well worth watching, because they are hilarious, genuinely hilarious.
Oh, good. Was there ever a point in your odyssey, in your Scooby-Doo odyssey, that where you thought, I simply can't go on?
Well, the Scrappy-Doo era was tough.
Was it?
For many reasons. It was tough because Scrappy... And you don't need to go much further there. But also because it strayed away from the original premise. So there are a whole raft of episodes where there's no supernatural. And where there is supernatural, it's genuine and not fake. And it just doesn't work because it doesn't have the same dynamic. And most of the rest of the gang are absent for that whole stretch as well.
That's right. I remember that. I can remember thinking that I much preferred the episodes where the whole gang was in than the ones which are just Scooby and Shaggy and Scrappy.
Yeah, because Scrappy and Shaggy, to a certain extent, are the most irritating characters out of all of them.
They are, aren't they? So God knows why Velma, what Velma sees in Shaggy, we're going to say.
But it also breaks up the traditional dynamic because if you when you take Mystery Incorporated as a whole group of characters, then it's the Commedia dell'arte.
What's that?
So the, you don't the, know what the Commedia dell'arte is?
No, I don't.
Stephen, instruct him on what the Commedia dell'arte is.
The Commedia dell'arte is a whole bunch of characters that come from the Italian way of performing. There's Punchinello in there.
Yeah, Harlequin, Pantaloon, all of those characters are from the Commedia dell'arte. But they have... So pretty much every sitcom that has... a group of characters, you'll be looking at the Commedia dell'arte for the aspects that the characters have. So the lovers or the high-class character or the czar, the clowns.
Yeah.
And as a group dynamic, when you break that up then, you lose lots of the key elements.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, because it is possible to have too much fun.
Is it?
You can't just be. Can't just have comedy the whole way through. You've got to have a bit of tragedy and a bit of...
If you want a decent plot, you've got to have a bit of balance in it, which is why when you've got Shaggy, Scooby and Scrappy, you've essentially got three clowns and no substance.
Yeah. Is that why I don't like the Three Stooges?
Maybe.
Actually, that is a good point.
Yeah. They're in an episode of Scooby-Doo.
They're in an episode of Scooby-Doo and Guess Who, I think. They're one of the...
Oddly enough, they turn up in more cartoons than the Marx Brothers.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
I think we should just close the box on our Scooby-Doo robots. Mark, thank you so much for joining us. That was excellent.
My pleasure.
I loved every second of that. And your book, Zoinks! The Spooky Folklore of Scooby-Doo. If people want to find out more about it, where should they go?
So the publisher is Chinbeard Books.
Yeah.
So they'll be able to find out more in due course from the publisher, or if they follow me on social media, at Folklore Pod on Twitter, or you can find the Folklore Podcast easily on other social media platforms, then I inevitably won't shut up about it as it gets closer to publication.
Great. Well, we'll be linking to lots of things in our show notes, so we'll put a link to the publisher in there as well, so people can find that if they want to. Mark, thank you so much. And you've got a Not Shit Robot out of it.
Yeah.
Yay.
It's always a boon. Joining a very small pantheon of robots in our 50 years, including the creation of the humanoids robots.
Robbie,
the Tin Man from Wizard of Oz. Yeah.
There's going to have to be another overall ranking in due course, I think, isn't there?
There will be. Yes.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah. So thanks so much, Mark. Really, really appreciate you coming and spending the time with us here. Right, we're going to go and have a little lie down. But keep the channel open, because there might be some more little secret special podcasts that we put out while we're getting ourselves in order for season 8. Thank you so much for listening. Please share with all your friends, and we will see you very soon for another thrilling installment of 50 Years of Shit Robots. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
End of transmission. Repeat. End of transmission. Go about your business. We robots will not harm you.